There are secrets out there, guys. Performance marketing secrets, and knowing just one or two of them can absolutely light up your funnels. Let's go. This is the Revenue Driven CMO. I'm your host, Chris McKinnick. Join me as I uncover the secrets of the world's most elite CMOs marketing leaders. The Revenue Driven CMO is sponsored by Web Mechanics, the AI-driven performance agency that makes you smarter. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of Revenue Driven CMO. I am your host, Chris McKinnick, and we have got an awesome guest here for you today. A longtime marketer with a sales background, 100% performance driven, just the way we like him. He is a member at Sales Assembly. He's one of the executive members at Revenue Collective. And I know many of us are involved with both of those. Currently, he is Chief Marketing Officer at One World Sync, which is a really interesting product content orchestration company that's growing very quickly and taking market share. He leads a global team of marketers and sales development professionals who help brands and retailers sell more confidently with impactful content. With over 20 years of experience in B2B marketing, sales, and customer service, TJ has a proven track record of launching and growing successful divisions, products, and solutions in the e-commerce, hosting, and IT infrastructure domains. So without further ado, welcome everybody to the show, Mr. TJ Waldorf. How are you, TJ?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Doing great. Feeling good. Super duper excited for this conversation. I appreciate you making the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
So you know how we like to start. We like to lead with the value. Go ahead and tell everybody that's listening, like, what is one of your best kept secrets to marketing success?
I love this question. With all the new shiny tools with AI, you know, everywhere you go, I really think that my secret, at least, would be just staying close to the fundamentals of marketing, right? And getting out, talking to customers, you know, right messaging, right time, right people. I think if you stay close to that, yes, some of this, you know, new gen AI is going to certainly help. But I think if you lose sight of the fundamentals, it's not going to do what it needs to do. So that's where I would start.
Hey, exclusive for listeners of this podcast, Web Mechanics will do 10 to 20 hours of work for you for free. Literally no sales calls, no BS. Just give them a problem and they will put a team to work for you for free for 10 to 20 hours, even if you're already a client. If you're struggling with demand gen, lead gen, SEO, SEM, Google Ads, LinkedIn Ads, conversion optimization, if you can't get Facebook or Meta Ads to work for the life of you, or you can't figure out attribution, Web Mechanics will take a good hard look at whatever problem you give them, whatever programs you put in front of them, and they will give you an objective, informed opinion, plus some advice from 10 to 20 hours of senior level attention. So I would suggest take them up on this offer. It's ridiculous. Go to revenuedrivencmo.com/free, fill out the 2-minute form, and you will not regret it. Literally zero downside, unlimited potential for growth. So do yourself a favor, revenuedrivencmo.com/free, no hyphens, no punctuations. You will be happy about that decision. I would agree. Yeah, I would agree 100%. And it's so easy to lose sight of the fundamental, right?
It is.
Early on in when we first started Web Mechanics, probably 15 years ago, it was 100% startup, right? There was like two of us or three of us, and everybody was wearing all the hats. And it was like days, weeks would just fly by, you know, in the blink of an eye. And I had this little mantra where I was like, okay, so much stuff to do. What do I do? Where do I start? But anytime that I felt like that, like, what do I do? Where do I start? My auto response was go sell a deal.
Yeah.
It was just like, hey, what, you know, so many things to do. What should I focus on? Sell a deal.
Yeah.
Like, simple as that. Fundamentals, right? Like, sales solves all problems. Just when in doubt, go sell a deal.
Exactly. And, you mentioned that I have a sales background as well. And I think, you know, a lot of that plays into kind of my thinking around staying close to the fundamentals. I mean, even today, and, you know, I'm sure other CMOs do this, but perhaps not enough, is get in front of customers, you know, grab lunch, have dinners. Like, don't think that that's not part of your role because you're in marketing and not in sales. It really is part of our role. So that's stuff I still love to do.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I think that more and more CMOs are joining that. Mm-hmm. Like I heard a story that was told by a CMO of a CEO that, did an initiative for some period of time where he was going to visit or speak with at least one customer each day.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the week, he would write an email to the entire company basically saying, you know, what he heard from mm-hmm. the client, what feedback they got, good, bad, ugly, etc. And this CMO was incredibly impressed by that. He said it was like a very powerful activity, highly visible. It's like, here's a CEO in the trenches. Yeah. I was always inspired by that. I haven't done that myself. It's still kind of on my list of things to do, but it's just so easy to get wrapped up in all the stuff that's happened. So how do you stay? So CMO is the hardest job in the C-suite, no doubt. CMO is the hardest job in the C-suite.
I would agree.
There's so many different things that require your attention, and you're being pulled in so many different directions, and there's pitches coming in. Like, you know, every inbox that you have is just filled with pitches, probably, I imagine. How do you have any techniques or habits or mental frameworks or something that that help you to make sure that you don't lose sight of the fundamentals?
Yeah, you know, a couple things come to mind, and I'm pretty religious about, you know, managing my day and my week and my calendar. And so you know, on Thursday morning, just as an example, I've got, you know, an hour and a half blocked off where, you know, I'm looking at customers, you know, satisfaction surveys, NPS scores, just the qualitative feedback that's coming through. And I use that as almost my research time, where I like get into those conversations that are happening with our other teams, just again, so I can stay close to what's happening. And, you know, a lot of times there's, you know, some nice insights or nuggets that you can gain from that you can then take back to the marketing team and say, hey, here's what I'm hearing. I'm seeing this, you know, these trends, or even these conversations that are happening with our support team. Maybe we should do something with that. What that something is can vary, but that's one example.
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned getting close to customers, even visiting them or speaking with them. Sounds like you're reviewing feedback qualitatively. I'm curious, is there anything else big, like on your list of what you consider to be like fundamental must do block and tackle type activities?
You know, messaging is key. And I think the further up the marketing ladder you climb, you can maybe remove yourself from that almost too far, where like maybe part of this is because I have the BDR organization too, but literally getting in and looking at the emails and how they're, you know, how they're messaging, what we can do, the problems that we can solve, and having conversations with our BDR team and helping them adjust, right? Looking at open rates, response rates, all of that.
Yeah. So that's, your job's even harder than a lot of CMOs because you've got the BDR team as well. How many people report to you total? How many people in your org, I guess?
Yeah, so we have about 25 people in the organization. And, you know, I always talk about the marketing org in like three pillars. We have core marketing, so product marketing, demand gen, content marketing, et cetera. The BDR team is also within that organization. And then we have a team that we refer to as community enablement. And that team works mm-hmm. with, for example, our retailers to help their suppliers solve their product content needs. So they're out there, you know, kind of co-marketing and partnering to mobilize and engage those supplier communities. We can talk more about that if that's interesting, but it's a bit of a unique function, maybe to what we do and what One World Sync does that I've not had before. So it's been fun to kind of wrap my arms around that.
Yeah, it sounds almost like a channel, like a
partner little bit,
channel.
Yeah, a little bit.
Interesting. And just out of curiosity, so of those 25 people, are they spread equally across the three divisions, or is the like demand gen the biggest and then the other two are smaller?
Yeah, the core marketing organization is the biggest for sure. Yep.
Yeah. Very cool, man. Well, I love that message. Block and tackle, fundamentals. It's never going to hurt you. You know, you might not post a double up or a triple up, but you will over time reap the rewards of that steady approach and that steady focus on things that you know are important.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I saw maybe one other thing to add, and I saw somebody post about this on LinkedIn the other day, which is, you know, don't be afraid to do the things that don't scale. And what she was talking about is, you know, getting in and looking at how are leads flowing through your CRM and what's actually happening once it gets to sales. What are they doing? What are the conversations that are happening? And, you know, you can obviously look at reports and look at high level data, but to like dig in and do the things that don't scale and do some of that manual work is just another way to kind of stay close to that.
I love it. Yeah, you sound like a hands-on CMO, which is the type of CMO that I like the best.
Try to be.
For sure. Well, that's awesome. Yeah, all the way down to like the email messaging. I mean, yeah, I like, you know, some might call that nitty-gritty, some might call that too much in the weeds, but I call that the basic block and tackle fundamental.
Yeah.
Like that's that message that you're putting out into the market. Cool. Well, thank you so much for that. And I also like the sentiment of what you said about don't be afraid to do the things that don't scale. Because I know myself, a lot of times I'm a very hands-on leader as well. And I think that, you know, I think about systems and processes and systems thinking. It doesn't come naturally to me, but I try to sort of force myself to think about it. But that's good validation, I think, like to not be afraid to do the things that don't scale. Because I think back on my own career and some of the contributions that I've made that have been, you know, of the game changing sort of type, many of them stemmed from being very deep in the weeds and very close to the work. And I think that's a threat. Like as people grow and progress in their orgs, it's like their hands and fingers often get further and further away from the keyboard. So I think that's a good thing to encourage people to stay in the weeds, stay close to the work, because especially in the world of marketing where things change so fast, like if you pull away for a year or two, like you're significantly behind the curve.
Yeah. And, you know, don't get me wrong. You have to kind of pick and choose where you do some of that. And, you know, you got to hire a great team that can manage those specific functions and trust that they're going to get the job done. But I think taking some time, right, dedicating some of your time, some of your schedule to doing some of that work, so that manual work, that stuff that doesn't scale, I think it's valuable.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Don't spend your whole day doing
exactly
writing cold email.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Cool, man. Well, let's talk about One World Sync a little bit.
Sure.
For folks that aren't familiar with it, maybe you could give us just like an overview.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're, you know, as you said, we're in the, we call it product content orchestration space, which is, you know, if you think of all of the product data and product content that's required to sell a physical product, either in a store or online, we sit right between a brand and a retailer to make that happen. So, you know, an example would be, you know, let's take PepsiCo, for example. You know, they have, you know, a pallet of Pepsi products that they need to get from their warehouses to, you know, a Walmart location, a Walmart store. There's a bunch of data around the size of the packages, you know, weights and dimensions and all the information that's needed to power the supply chain. So that's one piece of what we do. And that was, you know, a big part of our history and kind of where we grew up. And then, you know, take it to the consumer side, which is, you know, you can go in and buy the product in the store, but you can also go online, go onto walmart.com, look for that Pepsi product, understand if it's available in the store to go pick up and all of that. And so when you're on, it's called a product detail page, looking at that product.
Sure.
A lot of that content and pretty much the entire page we power. So we kind of sit behind that. So the images, the product descriptions, all the way down to ratings and reviews, our platform powers all that content. So I kind of, I geek out about it because thinking about everything that has to happen, you know, to sell a product from a consumer lens, like you don't think a lot of what has to happen behind the scenes. So
I would have assumed that Walmart themselves like had a team that was upkeeping it. So they're basically, it's almost like a feed, like an XML feed kind of thing, where it's just like, and you guys are the ones in the, you know, behind the scenes populating, and it's just
exactly, yep,
is embedded basically into their pages.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the next time you're looking at a product, you know, whether it's on Walmart or, you know, Target or Amazon, there's a good chance that we're powering, you know, at least some of that page.
Interesting. Interesting. So then, so you guys write the product descriptions as well?
So like we can.
Crisp and refreshing Pepsi.
Like we can. And we actually have, you know, I mentioned AI right out of the gate. You know, we have some tools built into our platform that can help write those product descriptions. But in, you know, in other cases, the brand themselves, so Pepsi would write the product description and, you know, put that into our platform. And then we syndicate it out to a bunch of retailers.
Interesting. So if Walmart wants to make a change to it, is that a thing that happens? Like Walmart's like, oh, this is too long for our page template. Like, make it shorter for us.
That's a really good question. I feel like you might know part of our business. We actually have, you know, we call them playlists, but in our platform, we have, you know, a playlist for Walmart that fits their style guide. And so if their product description needs to be a certain number of characters or whatever it is, you know, you pick the Walmart playlist and it will, you know, fit to a size.
Interesting. How fascinating. I love discovering businesses that it's like, who ever knew that that was a business, right? How did you, like, what's your founding story? How did you guys get into this?
So I've been with the company for 4 years. The company's been around for 20 plus years. And, you know, really the business started around that supply chain and logistics data that I mentioned. So, you know, that's really where everything started 20 years ago. Fast forward to 2019 and a private equity firm called Battery Ventures acquired One World Sync. And really since then, we've been on this journey to power the PDP, so to speak, right? So all the e-com data and content that you see, we've either built new capabilities to support that or we've acquired, you know, other companies, you know, to support and serve some of those different elements of that page. So that's the journey that we've been on, and it's been a lot of fun.
So then one last question,
yeah,
and then I want to talk about some win stories, like some of the things, some of the big wins that you've had. But so you've got two sides of the business, the logistics side and then the more like consumer facing side. Yeah. On the logistics side, who's your customer? Is it Pepsi or is it the like trucking company?
No, it's going to be Pepsi. It would be Pepsi in that case. Yeah. Yeah. And we, you know, if you asked me kind of where we were founded. All that logistics data is typically managed by a team inside of Pepsi that would be referred to as like the master data team, right? That's the team that's kind of managing all of that inside of our platform, right? And they could be going directly inside of the platform or they could be feeding information from their internal systems, ERPs, PLM, so to speak, or in other words, and then feeding that directly in, and then we syndicate it out. So it's going to vary depending on the size of the brand. And we work with, you know, large enterprise brands all the way down to, you know, Chris is just starting your, you know, your cookie store, and we could help you too.
Yeah, I just started my Etsy shop.
There you go.
Cool. And then so on the consumer side, then also Pepsi would be the customer, not Walmart.
They both would be actually.
Oh, they both?
They both would be, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's fascinating. I've got other questions about that. But not everybody is probably as geeky as me. So
yeah, we can follow on. We can follow up on that.
So, tell me about some wins. What are you most proud of, like, in the 4 years that you've been doing that? I love win stories.
Yeah, last year, June of last year, we we basically came out with, you know, a new positioning, new messaging. We refreshed the brand, really because we had changed so much the 3 years prior that we really felt like, you know, our marketing, kind of our forward facing, appearance had really changed to catch up to that. And so, you know, we started this project, you know, about 8-9 months prior to June of 2023, did a lot of work, a lot of customer interviews, prospect interviews, understand kind of how they're thinking about what we do, because we're, you know, the space that we play in, there's, you know, you'll hear of product information management tools, you'll hear of content creation services, you'll hear of digital analytics tools. And so it's pretty fragmented in terms of, you know, everything that you need to do in order to power those experiences that I mentioned. And really the journey that we've been on is to be able to do that for our customers all under one umbrella. And so that's really what that repositioning exercise and brand refresh was middle of last year. And, you know, we really fun thing, we timed it with one of our big customer events. And so we were at the customer event, everything, you know, brand refresh, everything changed. We also got up on the NASDAQ tower in Times Square too, which was pretty cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Are you guys public?
No, we're not.
No.
Nope.
Gotcha. Cool. So how was the response to it? It was well received.
Super well received. I mean, you know, our customers really have everything that we've done is because we're hearing that our customers have certain needs and we're trying to solve their needs again under one roof. And so, you know, coming out with this new positioning, this new messaging, it really, you know, struck a chord and hit home, and they're like, yes, this is what we need and this is what we've been asking for. So yeah, it was a win for sure.
Brilliant. Well, congratulations, man. That's awesome. Yeah, and the site looks really nice. I'm just on the site right here. It looks looks really nice. I like your tour the platform call to action instead of like a request a demo. It's like everybody said request a demo. Nobody wants to request a demo. But touring the platform sounds pretty cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So winding back to the present, what's really driving your guys' revenue engine? Like what either channels or go-to-market motions? Like where are most of your net new customers coming from?
You know, a lot of it's driven by, you know, inbound marketing efforts. And then another big piece is I mentioned that other team that I have, which is called Community Enablement. And so we're essentially co-marketing and going to market with some of our retailers. And they're helping us get the message to their supplier communities. And so when I think of, you know, a lot of where, you know, our pipeline comes from, leads come from, it really is, it's inbound, the community enablement function. And then, you know, we have a BDR team, relatively newer function for us, but we're starting to see that grow as well. And so getting all three of those, you know, those engines running simultaneously is where we're at, you know, what's going to really
drive growth. Interesting. And then if we double click into inbound, is that mostly SEO, email?
A lot of SEO, a lot of content. You know, we do some paid, you know, PPC, but a lot of it's more SEO content, organic driven.
Yeah. I wonder what people would even search for this type of thing. Let me see. Distribute content,
yep.
Receive content.
Yep, exactly. You know, they'll search for things like, you know, I mentioned the Walmart example. I need
e-commerce product page.
I need, yeah, rich content for Walmart, things like that is what they're searching for. Or, you know, I need product photography, you know, other pretty specific terms that are going to solve those problems.
Oh, dude, I got to show you something. You got to see this. Hold up. I'm going to have to share my screen because you're going to love this. I have like 19 tabs open.
Gotta see it.
All right. Now, do not judge me based on how many unread Slacks I have, please. However, to see this. And so does the rest of the audience. All right, you see my screen right now?
I see Slack.
Oh. That's all right. So tool called rb2b.com, free to push into Slack, shows you your website visitors, the company visit, right? But an actual person level view of, hey, this individual has come to visit this website. Can you see this clearly?
Yeah.
So this individual came from Google yesterday at 4:33, right? That's one of our clients.
Okay.
So it's like, okay. So for your BDRs, that's one of our employees. So every once in a while, one of these comes through that either looks really interesting or we know them. It was a former, you know, client, whatever it might be. And so the BDRs basically know to then go and prioritize them.
Okay.
So I'm thinking your world, well, you're probably, I've never seen that person level identification before. I've seen the company level, but the person level I've not seen before. Yeah. And it's already paid off for us. Like we just started using that a couple, not long ago, just probably a week or two ago, discovered it. One of our guys, Jared, discovered it, set it up 5 minutes, free to push to Slack. If you want to push it to CRM, they'll charge for it. But it's already paid off. Like you see somebody that was visiting, we wait a little bit, right? Because you don't want to be like,
you're on my website.
Wait 24 hours. And then I'm just like, shoot them a note like, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
You know, how's it going? Boom. They respond and it was like, oh, I just sent you a referral. Da 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 da. By the way, new deal in pipeline, just like that.
Wow. That's awesome.
So yeah.
I'll be checking that out.
For the BDR team.
For sure.
Yeah. It's just rb2b.com.
Yep.
Tell them Chris from Web Mechanics sent you.
Send me your referral code.
Yeah, I should be an affiliate for them. For the last 2 weeks, I've been telling everybody who will listen.
Nice.
But hopefully that's a nice little nugget for the audience too.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll definitely check it out.
Speaking of which, if you like that, drop us a like, drop us a comment wherever you get your pod. We do appreciate that. So back to One World. So you told us big win with the repositioning, inbound plus BDRs plus community enablement is driving the revenue engine. Sounds like you guys are doing great. What is keeping you up at night? What are some of your big challenges?
You know, I always explain this, and it's both a challenge but a huge opportunity for us in that, you know, One World Sync as a company has been known for so long as doing a very specific thing, which is that supply chain logistics data element of what we do. And so with all of this change that's happened with, you know, us building or buying new capabilities over the last, you know, few years, you know, there's a perception or mindset change that we have to instill in our customer base to help them understand that, hey, we're so much more than you probably knew us for, you know, a few years ago, and, you know, we can help you with a lot more today. And so cross-selling, upselling is a huge opportunity for us. And that's really where, you know, a lot of my focus, my team's focus, the sales team's focus is, you know, going to these customers that are only using us maybe for one capability that we have and helping them solve other problems that they might be solving today, either manually or through other point solutions. And when they have, you know, when they have to do it with other point solutions, you know, my CEO a lot of times says they're almost forced to be their own IT company to get all these different systems to talk together. Whereas if they were doing this with us, it already works together and talks right to each other. So, again, big opportunity, but also, you know,
huge the challenge opportunity. Huge opportunity. I love that game, like the upsell cross-sell game.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite games to play.
Mine too.
One thing that we have done and continue to do, we call it a Christmas tree doc because at the end of it, it's red and green, where we list out all the clients in column A, list out all the offerings across, you know, columns B through F.
Yeah.
Like organic search, paid social, you know, all the different service lines that we do.
Yeah.
And then clients get basically a green box if they're using it or buying it, yeah, and a red box if they're not. And then you can, in that way, visualize, you know, the penetration.
Yeah.
And we used to basically say, great, go change the red boxes to green. But what I've discovered and learned the hard way is that not all cross-sell opportunities are created equal,
mm-hmm,
right? So when you tell everybody, okay, go try to upsell everybody on everything, sometimes the products don't make sense or the offerings don't really make that much sense.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the offerings might make sense, but, you know, the customer themselves, they may not grow, you know,
sure,
like they might be like a lower potential client. And so what happened to us historically in the past was like a real scattered effort,
mm-hmm,
a real scattered effort. We would get some deals, you know, and even some good ones sometimes. But we had a consultant come in and they oversaw one of these meetings and they're like, why are you focusing an equal amount of attention, like, on all the clients? Like, why not consolidate forces and, you know, sort of, pull all the resources together,
right,
and focus on the 20% of clients that are like 80, you,
yeah,
know,
the needle movers,
driving 80%,
right,
of the revenue. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. We,
so that's helped us a lot.
We don't have as cool of a name as you do. You called it the Christmas tree chart. I like that.
Christmas tree duck. Yeah.
You know, it's essentially a white space analysis. So what's the white space out there? You know, which part of your customer base, you know, may have a need or is going to care about certain capabilities. And so we look at that, and to your point, they're not all created equal. And, you know, not every customer is going to have the same level of propensity to,
right,
want to buy, you know, certain things. So, yeah. Focusing your efforts on where that propensity is high is absolutely the right way to do it.
Yeah. So, so how are you guys approaching it? I mean, it sounds like you're doing the white space analysis and then.
Yep. We're doing the white space analysis. And, you know, one of the things that's changed for us, you know, over the last few years is that we've opened up new, buyer personas or buying groups. And so the way that we're, you know, we've started kind of moving toward, in terms of how we structure our sales team, how we think about the marketing team, is, you know, focusing on certain sets of capabilities. So if we're selling to e-commerce teams are going to care about, you know, let's call it four or five of those capabilities. If we're selling to the master data team, they're going to care about certain things. And so aligning those resources to each one of these, you know, buying groups or personas is how, you know, the approach that we're taking to really focus, like you said.
Yeah. Nice. What are you guys doing? I'm curious from an email perspective.
Yeah, we're, you know, standard email nurture. We're doing a lot of that. You know, we do a lot. We actually have a webinar coming up next week. And so there's, you know, more that we do to, you know, once they show up to the webinar or attend, to nurture them and provide a lot of value ongoing with, you know, whether it's, you know, we do a lot of research in terms of how our ratings and reviews performing on Amazon or on Walmart, and really doing as much as we can to provide just as much value as possible, even if, you know, this specific customer is not going to be ready to buy something from us in the next, you know, year.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah. So the upsell cross-sell game is both a challenge and an opportunity. Anything else challenge wise?
I mean, that's the big one. I think, you know, the other one would probably be just, you know, building this BDR function and team out a bit more. Like I said, it's relatively newer for us. So that's, you know, another big kind of area of focus for me.
Mm-hmm. How new is it? When did you start it?
You know, it's been, we've picked up pockets of BDR teams through some of our acquisitions. So, you know, technically, you know, 2 years ago, but again, because we've made some of these acquisitions and picked up new BDR teams, my energy now is getting all, you know, everybody kind of operating in the same fashion, same system, in kind of in a unified manner.
Yeah. It's tough, man. The BDR game is tough. It does not come naturally to me. I do not have a background in it. Is that sort of your background? Because I know you came up through sales. Mm-hmm. Is like the managing and leading the BDR team something that like is in like right in your wheelhouse, or is it a little bit foreign to you?
No, it's pretty my wheelhouse. I mean, I managed, you know, if you look at my LinkedIn profile, like early on, I managed inside sales team. So a lot of the inside sales motions of, you know, doing cold call, but managing a deal fully through the sales cycle. The BDR team is just doing the front half of that, right? Or the front piece of it. So a lot of really similar, you know, similar motions between those teams.
Yeah. And I'm curious, like by channel, is it email heavy, or do you guys do a lot of calls, or is it mostly LinkedIn based, or like how would you break it out percentage wise?
It, you know, we're moving more towards doing more calling. You know, you hear all the time that cold calling's dead. I don't believe that. And we see it in the results that when we are making more calls, that we're seeing the results. It's this like multiplier effect that if you're using the channels at your disposal, you're using LinkedIn, you're using email, you're using phone, that you're creating just more, I'll use the, you know, Ehrenberg Bass term, which is a mental availability, right? They're seeing you, they're hearing you more often, your brand, your name. And so I think using the channels, not necessarily equally, but in concert with one another is the way to go about it.
Oh man, I got to tell you about my friend, Joey from Apex Revenue.
Okay.
We're running a little bit low on time, but he, has something awesome for anybody that's doing outbound calling.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, exactly how it works, but it's more or less that like you give him a list of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And he either has the data or he has a team that essentially will call through, and tell you, I don't know how manual it is versus like how predictive it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it basically tells you which of them have the highest propensity to actually answer the phone.
Interesting.
Because there's some guys like me that if I don't recognize that number, I'm just not picking it up ever. I'll listen to the voicemail, you know, but like, even if it's the right area code, whatever, if it says, you know, if it's an unknown number, 0% chances that I'm going to pick it up. But then others do.
Yeah. Yep.
So he posts some crazy case studies for outbound teams where it's like the number of dials is half, but like number of conversations, number of appointments, things is like double.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Isn't that great? Yeah. You know,
have you ever heard of such a thing?
I haven't heard of that specific case, but I'll check that out for sure. You mentioned voicemails. One of the interesting things with voicemails, like, you know, many years ago, you would actually have to listen to the voicemail, but now you've got voice to text, you know, transcription. So it's almost like you're getting a text message. And so that's one of the things to, you know, that I'm reinforcing with the team is, leave a voicemail because they may not listen to it, but they're probably going to at least skim or read what you said.
Yeah.
And again, that's just another place where they're seeing your brand, you know, the brand name, they're seeing that it's, you know, that you can possibly solve some of their problems. And so I think, again, balancing and harmonizing those channels, working together is the way to go.
That's awesome. Well, hey, I've really enjoyed this. I'm very impressed by you as the leader and also by the team that built. Sounds like you guys are doing great. And I commend your focus on the basics and the fundamentals. It's really easy to overlook that, man.
Yeah.
It's really easy to get busy. And then before you know it, it's 5 o'clock and you know, time to sign off soon. And you're like, oh my goodness, what did I do today?
Yeah.
Did nothing productive.
Yeah, exactly.
So, it's like, it's almost like an apple a day keeps the doctor away, like a little bit of fundamentals every day.
Yep.
Like it's going to keep going and keep on growing.
Yeah. I've heard, you know, we talked a lot about BDRs, but, I heard, a chief revenue officer, I think, he worked for VMware a long time ago, say that cold calling and, you know, doing some of those basics is like calisthenics. You just got to get up and do it. Right. And build those muscles.
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Cool, man. Well, This has been awesome. For everybody listening, if you learned anything or enjoyed this, drop us a like, a comment, or share this with a friend. They will enjoy it. It's time for the lightning round, TJ. Are you ready?
I think so.
Here we go. Question number one. If you were to start a side hustle, what side hustle would that be?
You know, I would be I'd start a little barbershop, I think. Hopefully you've never heard that one.
No, never.
I'm wearing a hat today, so you can't tell, and maybe it's a bad idea, but I've been cutting my own hair since I was about 15, and I used to cut my friend's hair. I cut my son's hair.
The neighborhood barber.
So nice. Yeah, that's my side hustle.
That's awesome. Yeah. Fun. I actually was the neighborhood barber for a little while too.
All right.
Yeah, we shaved our heads like sometime in middle school as part of a bet that we lost. So we like shaved our hair off. And then ever since then, I was the neighborhood barber, and I learned how to give a pretty decent fade, actually.
Nice.
Yeah. And I became that again when COVID hit.
I'm sure there were a lot of at-home barbers at that point.
Yeah, right. Cool. Question number two is top three books, authors, influencers, podcasts, whatever you like, that have made an impact on you.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of books that I always recommend to people. One is called, it's called Taking People With You. It's by a guy named David Novak. He was the CEO of Yum Brands a long time ago. So like Taco Bell and Pizza Hut and all that. And you know, really what the book talks about is to be successful as a leader, like you have to bring teams along and people along on that journey and, you know, allow people to kind of lift you up. And there's a lot of really, really good, you know, both thought leadership, but then tactical, you know, actionable advice in that book. It's a really great one.
Nice.
The other one, which a lot of people have probably heard of or read, is High Output Management by Andy Grove.
Started reading
Founders
that.
Of Intel. No, it's a fantastic book. So you should finish it.
That's awesome. Okay.
And then, you know, a podcast that I listen to yours, of course. But one that I listen to, pretty religiously is, Jim Stengel. He has a podcast called, the CMO Podcast. And, you know, he interviews, it's interesting for me because he was a CMO at Procter & Gamble, and he interviews a lot of CMOs at consumer brands and retailers. And so for me, working in, you know, the company that I work in, the space that I work in, it's interesting to hear a lot of these, you know, CMOs at companies that are probably our customers talk about, you know, what's important to them and kind of what's going on in their world.
That's cool. You could use that to populate your outbound list.
100%.
Like have your BDRs be like, oh, your podcast was fire.
Yeah. Exactly.
Cool, man. Well, love it. And then question number three is, how do you avoid burnout and how do you also help your team to avoid burnout?
Yeah. You know, I mentioned I've got a son, he's 14, spent a lot of time, you know, with him and my wife and just try to not think about work, you know, when I don't need to. So, you know, do a lot of that. Like to be outside, like to exercise. You know, I love to read. And so those are kind of my vices in that regard. And then with the team, you know, I purposely don't have so we use Google Chat internally. I purposely don't have Google Chat on my phone. And this is actually the first company I've done that, at. And it's because it's too easy to just shoot somebody a message, maybe at 7 o'clock at night or, you know, on the weekend and, you know, even if it's like unconsciously, you got a thought, a question, and you just ping them. You know, I don't do that. I try to let people enjoy their time away from work. So that's my hack.
No, that's me 100%. I was very guilty of that in the early years. Slack now has Google Chat may have this too, but Slack has from mobile, if you push and hold the send button, you can schedule.
Okay. Yeah.
I just discovered that. But so now I make a conscientious effort. It'll be like midnight and I have an idea, but I'm like, schedule.
Yeah. Yeah. 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago, I would have been very, very guilty of, you know, sending the late night email or the weekend email or, you know, the chat. So.
Yeah. I feel like work-life balance wasn't that big of a thing like 10 years ago. I feel like there's been ever since COVID, I think, because when COVID happened, it was like everybody suddenly was at work all the time. Right. They worked in their homes, you know? But there seems to be much more of an emphasis on work-life balance and burnout since then, which is a good thing, I think.
No, it is a good thing. And I think to the point of, you know, we were at home, but we were always at work. And so we had to be maybe more conscious and thoughtful of like, when do we draw the line of I'm in my upstairs office and I come downstairs and now I'm no longer at work. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that was the line.
Well, hopefully AI will make it so that we can all work like two-day work weeks, 4 hours.
Sure.
Cool, man. This has been awesome. I've really appreciated it. I'm sure that the audience is going to love it too. For folks that want to learn more about you or One World Sync, where would you direct them?
Yeah, so, you know, go to oneworldsync.com, check out our website. You know, a lot of really good information there about what we do. And if you want to connect with me, LinkedIn's the best place, TJ Waldorf. And just reach out.
Perfect. Awesome, TJ. We'll stay on the line just 1 second. We're going to wrap up. But for everybody else, that was another exciting episode of Revenue Driven CMO, and we will see you next time. And that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us here today. For show notes and other episodes, visit us at revenuedrivencmo.com. That's revenuedrivencmo.com. And hey, exclusive for listeners of this podcast, Web Mechanics will do 10 to 20 hours of work for you for free. Literally no sales calls, no BS. Just give them a problem and they will put a team to work for you for free for 10 to 20 hours, even if you're already a client. If you're struggling with demand gen, lead gen, SEO, SEM, Google Ads, LinkedIn Ads, conversion optimization, if you can't get Facebook or Meta Ads to work for the life of you, or you can't figure out attribution, Web Mechanics will take a good hard look at whatever problem you give them, whatever programs you put in front of them, and they will give you an objective, informed opinion, plus some advice from 10 to 20 hours of senior level attention. And that's just because you're a listener of this podcast. So I would suggest take them up on this offer. It's ridiculous. Go to revenuedrivencmo.com/free, fill out the 2-minute form, and you will not regret it. Literally zero downside, unlimited potential for growth. So do yourself a favor. revenuedrivencmo.com/free. No hyphens, no punctuations. You will be happy about that decision.